Welcome to ID the Future, a podcast about intelligent design and evolution.
Hi, this is Mike Behe. I've been a senior fellow with Discovery Institute for over 20 years. When the Darwinian establishment was enraged by my book, Darwin's Black Box, the Discovery Institute was there for me through thick and thin, and has been over the years for my intelligent design colleagues as well. It is your financial support of ID the Future and the Discovery Institute that makes all of that possible. Please consider giving a donation today to support scholars of intelligent design. Go to discovery.org/csc/2020 to give. That's discovery.org/csc/2020. Thanks.
Welcome to ID the Future. I'm your guest host today, Mike Keyes. Today, we have the privilege of speaking with Michael Flannery, who is Professor Emeritus of the University of Alabama at Birmingham, and he holds degrees in library science from several respectable institutions, and he has published extensively in medical history and bioethics, has gotten some awards for his work, and his most recent book is a continued study of the very interesting fellow Alfred Russel Wallace, who was the co-founder of the central idea of Darwin's evolution, that is natural selection. So welcome to the show, Mike.
Hi, Mike. Good to be with you today.
So there was an article you recently published at evolutionnews.org that ties in with your work in the history of biology, and the title of that article is Darwinism, Past, Present, and Future. And the past and the future reminds me a bit of my own book title, Unbelievable: Seven Myths About the History and Future of Science and Religion. So both of us have thought about the history of science in relation to contemporary science and where we think science and its relation to religion is heading. So to your article then, you quote Anne Reed, who is the executive director of the leading Darwin-only education advocacy group in America called the National Center for Science Education. And what, just kind of summarize, what was that quote you got from Anne Reed, and where did you go with that quote?
Well, Anne Reed, who, as you point out, is the executive director who took over from Eugenie Scott, who was her predecessor. Mm-hmm. The National Center for Science Education is a little deceptive because what it quite frankly is a Darwin lobby. That's the long and short of it. And she recently said, in I believe it was an op-ed in the Los Angeles Times, she said the science is settled. No credible scientist doubts that evolution is the theoretical and practical core of biology, she says, with more evidence emerging from a rich array of research fields with every passing year. She says that claiming that evolution remains an open question is scientifically preposterous. And she says it's like suggesting the jury is still out on whether matter is made of atoms.
Right, or whether the earth is flat or round or things like that.
Yeah, right. The same kind of some of the mythologies that you've been pointing out in your excellent book, Unbelievable, which I've been enjoying. So I thought this was a pretty sweeping claim, and it might deserve a little pushback.
Sure. And pushback you do. So tell us a little bit about how you respond to this unbelievable quote, I could say.
Well, what's interesting is I have a collection of essays. It's really an anthology called Darwin in the 21st Century, Nature, Humanity, and God. And these are 16 chapters that were compiled as a product of a series of conferences held at the Gregorian University in Rome and at the University of Notre Dame to commemorate the 150th anniversary of the publication of Darwin's Origin of Species. And the very last essay by Jean Guéon is titled, What Future for Darwinism? And I thought, now, what an interesting way to end a collection of essays on Darwin in the 21st century. The question is, what is the future for it? And of course, according to Ann Reed, you know, the future is thoroughly secure. Well, I went and I carefully read the essay, and apparently there really are some questions about the future of Darwinian theory. And Guyon does a good job of pointing some of these out. And at the end of the essay, you come to realize that really its security is rather tentative at this point. Now, this was nothing like the sort of triumphalist claims that were being made during the centennial of Darwin's Origin of the Species, which was held, of course, in 1959, 100 years after the publication of the book, at the University of Chicago. And there you had thousands of individuals. I think there were something like 2,500 participants from like almost 200 colleges, all triumphantly claiming that, you know, Darwin has settled the issue on what is life and where life is going. And it was a very sort of a lot of breastbeating about what they had accomplished. And you don't see anything like that 50 years later. And I thought, how interesting, you know, 50 years have made. And yet, apparently, Ann Reed has not gotten that memo.
Yeah, it sounds like Ann Reed is stuck 50 years ago, how the leading experts would express the state of Darwinism then, but not so much the Darwinism today, huh?
Yeah, well, she's still at the Darwin Centennial.
Okay.
And she hasn't realized that 50 years has gone by. And there are, as Guyon knows, there are some real problems with evolution. There's the Evo-Devo debate. Symbiotic ecosystems have not been really dealt with very effectively under the Darwinian paradigm. He actually says, I predict that universal Darwinism as a philosophy of nature will die one day or another, just as the mechanical philosophy did approximately two centuries ago. And I thought that was a pretty striking claim to make 150 years after the publication of Darwin's Origin.
Yeah, you know, regarding the mechanical philosophy, that was wildly popular up through the time of Newton and beyond. But Newton himself didn't fit nicely into that paradigm because universal gravitation, as Newton described it, couldn't be explained by the direct push or shove or pull of matter. It was this sort of action at a distance that defied the categories of mechanical philosophy. So that philosophy quickly unraveled. I mean, sure, there's a lot to be said for the paradigm of mechanical philosophy helped science progress to a point, but there were other broader ways of thinking that were needed to take science to the next level. So it sounds like Darwinism, although helpful in some degree, has kind of outrun what it can legitimately explain, has been extrapolated way beyond its legitimacies. Would you say that's a fair assessment, Mike?
Yeah, and I would say that your word unraveling is probably a good word for describing the current state of the Darwinian paradigm. It is coming apart. It's as you say, unraveling. And unraveling seems to be accelerating, I think. And the assessment by the late Jean Guyon is not only standing, but I think a few years after, as we sit here and talk, I think his statement is even more true than when he made it, which was just a few years ago.
Yeah, he uses this term universal Darwinism, and he seems to have in mind particularly applying Darwinism to the human sciences, which is rather puzzling because, I mean, he has high hopes for this, although he does predict its eventual demise. So it's kind of a weird place he's in. He's kind of cheering for it, but he's also expressing doubts about it. How do you take that?
Yeah, well, I will say this about the essay as a whole, and I said this in my article, I'll say it again, that Guyon made enough different predictions and had enough of his bets to be right about at least some of them. And
like any good psychic would do, right?
that's right. And so, yeah, he sort of, when you look at that article, talks about, oh, the great strides that have been made in psychology and sociology and the social sciences with regard to Darwinism. But then he sort of backs off from that and says, well, you know, we're not sure what the future of that is going to be either, but it certainly seems to be growing by leaps and bounds. And I'm not sure that I share his enthusiasm for that. And there are plenty of critics of evolutionary psychology today. And I think in many of the social sciences, critiques of Darwinism, particularly with regard to certain things like sexual selection and some of those areas, are even stronger than they were just a few years ago.
Yeah, evolutionary psychology is one of those fields that's filled with these just-so stories that don't meet the high standards of what counts as a good theory. In fact, I have an essay on just that, of what counts as a good theory. It's called Theoretical Virtues, and the title of my essay is Systematizing the Theoretical Virtues, that is, traits of a theory that indicate likely truth, such as evidential accuracy, causal adequacy, predictive power, and so on. And Darwinism applied to the human sciences scores so low in multiple categories of a good theory that it's really pitiful. And I think people like Jean Guyon realize, because he's not only was not only a historian of science, but also a philosopher of science. So I think maybe his knowledge of the higher standards that Darwinism applied to the human sciences falls short of kind of helps to temper some of his comments, because he realizes that some of this could easily be wiped away in the future.
I think he knows there's problems with it.
Yeah.
If anybody ever questions that, and you know, as your article I'm sure points out, one of the people, if you really want to read somebody who shows how evolutionary psychology is just a series of just so stories, read Steven Pinker.
Yeah.
Yet you can't read anything by him that isn't festooned with all kinds of sort of tentative phrasings like might have been, could be, perhaps as. These are phrases that littered Pinker's literature, and how that stands up to any kind of solid science is utterly beyond me. We can speculate what might have been till the cows come home, but I don't think that equates to the kind of hard science that Pinker likes to claim to be a part of.
Right. And Darwin himself, of course, was quite good at transforming, at least to the eye of many readers, mere possibilities into what seemed like probabilities, even though it fell way short of the evidence. So, and I know you've written about this, because comparing Darwinism yesterday with Darwinism today. So,
right. Yeah, well, you know, really, Darwin was a master at that. As you point out, he would turn possibilities into probabilities, and he would speculate. And then when he couldn't cover all of his bets, then he would just, you know, issue sort of a future promissory note of a future discovery. So he could never be claimed to be wrong, you know.
Yeah, and I guess part of our job as historians and philosophers of science is to keep the track record before the public eye. Say, okay, you've had these promises. How are we doing? And so assessing it 100 years later and 150 years later is a very appropriate thing to do. So thanks for helping us to do that today, Mike. And I want to have another conversation with you that would relate this to your scholarship on Alfred Russel Wallace. But how about if we call it quits for today, and we'll come back and pick up on this later?
Sounds good, Mike.
All right. So we've been speaking with Mike Flannery, a Alfred Russel Wallace scholar and more generally a historian of biology in much of his work. And we've been able to explore some interesting topics about Darwinism, past, present, and future, which is the title of his essay at evolutionnews.org. You can go there, look at the article to check out the links to the sources that we've cited and discussed today. I'm Mike Keyes. Thanks for joining us at ID the Future.
This program was recorded by Discovery Institute's Center for Science and Culture. ID the Future is copyright Discovery Institute. For more information, visit intelligentdesign.org and idthefuture.com.